The third topic under the funding innovation topic is how do these models, the new models of funding, influence the design and delivery of innovation programs in general? I think you touched upon it in several of your answers, but could you summarize what you shared so far?
So I'll just say that the funding is kind of a forcing mechanism for entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs. There is such a thing. We never want to have kind of too much fear as an innovator. We don't want to feel like we're under immediate pressure to get results tomorrow. Okay, we want to have pressure in the right direction, the direction to learn something, to generate knowledge that can be useful to make a decision, to invest further. Okay, so that's the right type of pressure. The wrong type of pressure would be like deliver ROI tomorrow. Like that's not what we're looking for. But we do want pressure, right? Entrepreneurs are kind of anti-fragile in that way. Like they actually benefit from a little bit of pressure. And that kind of clear runway with some relatively clear criteria that, okay, if you would like to scale your project, we would like to scale our project, we will have to provide evidence that we deserve $500,000 or $1 million worth of funding. And that evidence will have some criteria such as we have a demonstrated customer need. We have a signed purchase order if this is a B2B project, for example. And we have at least 10 more companies in the pipeline that we are having meetings and doing demonstrations with. Okay. So it doesn't need to be absolutely fixed. I think that is actually almost a worse problem to have such strict criteria that an oddball project that maybe all of a sudden a B2C project sneaks in. It's like, well, we won't have a purchasing agreement signed. This is a B2C product. We want to be flexible. We want to understand the gate for $500,000 is perhaps demonstrated customer need. And we have to have an educated investor class that is able to look at vanity metrics and differentiate those from actionable metrics and really evaluate that evidence, hopefully based on some personal experience of the entrepreneurship process. But we need these things to apply pressure to the entrepreneur so that we're not getting off distracted by just pure research or just following our whims and not having any concern about the budget or commercialization at any point in the next 4 years. Because everyone knows that if you are on a project that has a 4 year time span, odds are you're going to be off that project way before the consumer feedback comes in, and you're never going to have to worry about it. So that's not right. We need to keep these time horizons relatively short. We have to have an educated investor class that agrees with the entrepreneurs, what the funding criteria is, so that it's well understood, what the fail condition is or the invalidation criteria, as some people say. And that will apply enough pressure to keep the entrepreneurs motivated, to keep things moving forward and keep moving things in the right direction of generating knowledge to make a coherent business model.
What about reporting? So, if you talk about funding, there's several stakeholders that you probably should report to. How would you report in under these new models?
So reporting is a little bit funny. I think a lot of companies worry about reporting far too early in their transformation process. They worry about having some sort of strict structure and like, well, what if the entrepreneur is trying to fool us and get extra money? Like, well, you're normally giving away $10 million, so why are you worried about getting fooled for $500,000? But let's put that aside for the moment. But you're only running 10 projects in your brand new accelerator. Why are you worried about having a clear reporting structure and filing TPS reports? Like that doesn't make any sense. Just go and talk to the 10 startups. It's very important, from a pure startup perspective to have a cooperative board. Again, you don't want to have a board that's breathing down your neck every week. You want to have one that's pushing you in the right direction. I think for some organizations are going to have a lot of success, even just putting like a quarterly investor review. But Some will have a lot of benefit from having something a little bit more frequent, having a monthly process. I think it really depends on the type of projects that we're dealing with, whether it's B2B, whether it's B2C, whether it's ag tech or ed tech. The structure and the timing of this reporting is going to vary. So I can't give any specific guidelines there, but what I will say is that we should stop reporting via, you know, PowerPoint. I think the only reason to let entrepreneurs like get into this PowerPoint reporting structure is if you give a clear template and do not allow any sort of graphic design on it. Like just don't allow any, because it's almost guaranteed that the entrepreneur will spend a lot of time making this look as flashy as possible and as convincing as possible. And that's not what we're really looking for. We're really looking at clear data. So what I would actually suggest is doing a quiet read, and even also a blind read. So we know that we can remove biases in hiring by doing things like removing the names of people applying to housing, for example, or when they put musicians behind a screen to audition for orchestras, we all of a sudden notice that the gender disparity starts going away very, very quickly. So why can't we do that also for funding? Can we not make it necessarily about the ability of the entrepreneur to present? Could we just have them submit a document that we all sit in a room together and read? There's a wonderful format for meetings that's discussed in Radical Candor that I think is actually very very good. I'm actually just trying to figure out, remember what the name of the author is. Kim Scott, Radical Scott. She describes a meeting method. I don't think she came up with it, or maybe she did, but where somebody would prepare a briefing document and the people in the meeting, regardless of the topic, would spend the first 10, 15 minutes in a Google Doc simply reading it and commenting on it, okay, and asking questions directly in the document. And what this did was that the person who prepared the document would very often answer these questions in line in real time. And it would avoid a lot of back and forth discussion or people feeling that they have to make their voice heard or make the point, and sort of this kind of plus one point, you know, when you say the thing that the last person said, except slightly differently for about 10 minutes. Like, it avoids that type of discussion. And it really focuses on the issues so that when everybody is finished with their quiet read, you can have a dialogue out loud about the two or three key salient points that really need to be discussed. So I know it's not possible to remove all biases, but I think having a quiet read and removing the names of the entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs, ideally, if that was possible, if we didn't already know the project very well, would be a great advance in terms of making the reporting a little bit fairer, making it a little less concerned with the flash and the presentation rather than the content of the data, giving people a clear, not a super complicated template, but give people just a very simple, here's my one-page experiment report, fill that in, and we can discuss from there. Don't let people design their own formats and templates and add the logo and make it look all flashy. It's just distracting. So keep it simple. Try and make it blind. Make it a quiet read to begin with, and that's all that I'm recommending at this point in terms of making the reporting a little bit more friendly to entrepreneurs and a little bit less of a waste of time.
Thanks for that. Maybe it's the last one, zooming out, funding innovation versus running with your cash cow. What is a good balance there?
Oh, I don't know. I like running cash cows, but... there is some data. Again, this is a question more for an academic who has access to a very large number of companies. I have seen some rules of thumb which don't sound entirely unreasonable to me. The 70-20-10 is, of course, what Google says in terms of the three horizons. You know, you only invest 10% of your budget in those horizon three projects. Again, that's not to say that they're not worth investing in. It's just that they're also very, very cheap to run those early stage little projects. So as long as the cost is very low, then that percentage of your budget, you know, for 10% of your budget, you can get a very large number of Horizon 3 projects, enough to kind of get scale and get that 1 in 100 that will work. I've also seen some data that indicates that different industries will have better ratios in some regards. Like pharma, obviously, is going to have to invest a lot more in producing that drug that's going to be profitable in 10 years. So I don't think there's any fixed rules. I think every industry is going to be a little bit different. What I will say is that I think we should try and have a balanced portfolio regardless of what industry we're in. Again, talking about larger companies at the moment, ones that have multiple different product lines and can invest in dozens, if not hundreds of different projects, we would like to see a balanced portfolio of projects in Horizon 1, projects in Horizon 2, projects in Horizon 3, or if you don't like that framing, you know, adjacent, core business adjacent and disruptive innovation. We want to have a balanced frame of that. We'd like to have many more projects. It should be a much wider funnel in the disruptive innovation or Horizon 3 area than in the core business. And the core business, focusing has always been very beneficial to most companies, focusing on the thing that actually delivers the ROI. So having a balanced portfolio, I think, is very important. And the last thing I'll mention on that is, regardless of what frame you use, rather it's, if it's Horizon 3 Horizons or adjacent disruptive, I think we have to acknowledge that there's this kind of Horizon Zero that's not often talked about. And that's the projects that are in Horizon 1 that we really should be sunsetting. I don't think a lot of project folks who are doing portfolio mapping actually include that category. And there's kind of no acknowledgement of, wait a minute, this project is actually should be shut down. This core business is actually winding down. We're now just getting the laggards in the market. We should stop investing into that. There's this tendency to kind of squeeze the cow as much as possible. And at a certain point, that investment in the cash cow is actually not paying off. So we need to acknowledge that, move those things to Horizon Zero, and start winding them down. And that should be part of the balanced portfolio. Like, if we're not shutting down any projects in our portfolio, that in and of itself should be a sign.